Good morning and good afternoon, everyone. I'm Elliot Callan, CEO of Prosperity Financial Group, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Meet the Expert. Today, we're going to talk about estate planning. Some people say, I don't need estate planning. I don't have $20 million of assets. Or they just say, I'm just going to give everything to my two children. Or I have a business. I'll just give it to my kids. But it gets more complicated than this. And we're talking with Larry Beck, partner at Haas & Majerian in San Francisco and East Bay. Very successful at what he does. And I think you'll pick up a few very good ideas and tips. So welcome, Larry.
Thank you, Elliot. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So let me get right into those questions, Larry. And I might, as we go through these questions, find another question to ask you as well, based on what you say. Is that all right?
That's all right with me.
So first, what makes a great estate attorney, Larry?
A great estate attorney is somebody that listens very closely to what his clients tell him. It's very important to listen specifically to all the information that they're giving you, because a lot of times they have very concrete ideas about how their assets should be distributed. So you have to be a wonderful listener, and you have to make people feel comfortable enough so that they'll tell you what's on their mind, and then you can carry out their desires.
Okay. So I know in California, we're a probate state. We're also a community property state. That's different than many other states. But what exactly is probate? I think of it as a death tax, but what is it? And how does one avoid it?
Okay. So probate and death taxes are actually two different things, Elliot, and they're very different things. So probate is an issue of administering your estate when you're deceased. It really doesn't have anything to do with taxes. If you do nothing or you have a will and you die, there's going to be a probate. Probate is a court procedure by which a judge reviews what your seeming intentions are and who your beneficiaries are and who is going to receive what assets and what percentages of your money. So probate occurs when you don't have a living trust. The disadvantages, Elliot, of a probate are it's very expensive and very time consuming. Time consuming meaning that if you die and your assets go through probate, it generally takes about a year for the probate process to wind itself through, and it can take much longer because everything that occurs is supervised by the court system. And expensive? Okay, so I'll give you the numbers. For the first $100,000 in your gross estate, and when I say gross estate, if you have a mortgage on your house, it doesn't count. Gross estate is your overall estate without regard to your debts. First $100,000 is 4%, that's $4,000. Next $100,000 is 3%, that's $3,000. Next $800,000 is 2%, that's another $8,000 that goes A, to the attorney that does the probate, and B, to the executor that represents your estate in the probate. So if you have an estate worth $1 million, and in California, if you own property, you're at way over $1 million right from the get-go to begin with. So you start out at $15,000 to the attorney for your first $1 million, and the same amount to your executor. So it just climbs and it becomes very, very expensive. So if you do a living trust, is this the next question, Elliot? How do you avoid probate?
Well, how do I avoid it? When do I need a will or a trust in California? And do I ever need it, really need a will if I have any substance and just go directly for the living trust?
Okay. So if you have a living trust, you need a fail-safe document in case you don't title the assets in the name of the living trust, Elliot. Let's say you buy a house and you have a living trust and you forgot to do what the lawyer told you to do, which is to title the assets in the name of the living trust. So you just take it in your own name. I have clients that make that mistake all the time. You make that mistake, you have to have a way of getting it into the trust. So you need a will. Even if you have a trust, it's called a pour over will. It pours over your assets into the trust. Otherwise, there really is no reason to have a will if you already have a trust.
So let me go to another subject, Larry. And that is, I'm divorced, remarried. We've got his kids and her kids. Sometimes there are our kids involved in these situations. So how do I keep my wealth in the family with my current spouse? But I want to protect my children. I want to take care of them as well. What do I have to do?
Okay. So what you have to do is go to a good estate planning attorney, because the estate planning attorney will explain to you how you can make sure that your current wife gets some assets and your kids get some assets. Now, the problem that I often hear, Elliot, is that when somebody gets married a second time and they have kids from the prior marriage, they want to provide an income to their spouse, but at the same time, they want to make sure that their kids are ultimately going to receive the assets, at least when the spouse dies. So what can you do? You do a living trust, and you say in the living trust that when you're deceased, an irrevocable trust is set up for your spouse that is managed by somebody else. It's called a successor special trustee. The successor special trustee manages this irrevocable trust for the benefit of your spouse. And the trust says that your spouse gets all the income as it comes in from the assets in this trust, but can't touch the principal of the trust. And then when your spouse dies, the trust says that the property that's in the trust, the assets that are in the trust, get distributed to your kids. So that's how you protect your kids if you end up with a second marriage and you want to make sure that your spouse gets some income for the rest of his or her life.
So along that same lines of irrevocable trust or irrevocable trust, tomato, tomato type of word. If our family goal, or one's family goal, is to leave money to charity, to leave some form of a legacy, I know that you're the guy to talk to for legacies, so or setting them up. What are some good techniques for leaving a legacy to my family, to the hospital, to a Brighter Day charity, to whatever is important to that person? What are some good techniques?
Okay. So when you're charitably inclined, Elliot, there are so many options that you have that you can take advantage of. It's hard to describe, but I'm going to give you some general ideas as to how you can work with this. So number one, you can make what's called a testamentary gift to charity. You can say that when I die, I leave $20,000 to this particular charity, and I leave the rest of my assets to my spouse and my children. That's called a specific testamentary gift to charity. That's about the easiest thing that you can do to implement your gift to charity. But there are many more complicated options that you have. And one of them, you can set up what's called a charitable remainder trust right now, okay? The charitable remainder trust, Elliot, you put, let's say you got $500,000 of appreciated stock, and you don't want to sell that stock because you're going to have to pay capital gains. And if Biden has his way, with what's going on, the capital gains rates are going to even go up higher than what they currently are. So what can you do with that $500,000 worth of appreciated stock? You put it into what's called a charitable remainder trust. You put the stocks in this trust. It is an irrevocable trust. Once you set it up, you can't change it. You get all the income that is generated by the trust for the rest of your life. And if those stocks are sold within the trust, there's no capital gain to you. So what's the only disadvantage? When you die, the assets that were in that trust go to a charity. But that's what you wanted anyway. So you get no capital gains. You get the income off of those assets for the rest of your life. The charities sit there and they make you a big shot. You get invited to all kinds of interesting things. And let's face it, both of our types of clients, many people like that kind of stuff. Some people tell me, no way. I'd rather have it anonymous. I don't want any contact from the charities. But many of them say, this is great. I'm getting invited to dinners all the time. I get to rub elbows, with hotsy-totsy people. This is wonderful. So you get all those benefits. And on top of that, you get what's called an income tax charitable deduction when you put the $500,000 into the charitable remainder trust. So there's all kinds of great benefits to setting this thing up. And that's not the only thing that you can do for charity. There's lots of different things, but I just gave you a very simple one and a less simple one.
So on that same note, and then we'll leave it after this question, is using a life insurance trust, irrevocable life insurance trust, or ILIT, a good way to donate to charity?
Life insurance proceeds. If you own the life insurance policy and you die, the life insurance proceeds end up being subject to estate tax in your estate. So if you can figure out a way for them not to be subject to estate tax, that's a wonderful thing. And one of the ways that you can do that is to put the life insurance policy in an irrevocable life insurance trust called an ILIT, because you don't own the policy. The trust owns the policy. When you die, the proceeds go out to your beneficiaries income tax free. Now, if you're charitably inclined, you can have those proceeds go to charity. You can have some of them go to charity. You can have all of them go to charity. And that's another way you can avoid the estate tax on your life insurance proceeds.
Okay. So many of our clients, Larry, and I know we're a little bit in the weeds here of estate planning, but this is a good idea. And this is why we bring up these topics, so they can reach out to someone like you. So many of our clients own companies, and they own small companies. We're not talking about public stock. We're almost always talking about private stock, closely held family businesses, things like that, S-Corps, LLCs. So when we're talking about estate planning for family businesses, maybe my kids want to be in a business. Maybe my kids want nothing to do with the business. I don't know. All right. What should we be doing as owners to secure our business for either selling or for the next generation to avoid taxes? But also in the fact that if I have multiple children, but only one is interested, now what happens out of three?
Oh, okay. All right. So planning for the disposal of your business, either when you get old and you retire or upon your death, is a huge amount of, it's a huge portion of your overall estate planning, Elliot. And when anybody's got an ongoing business, I always tell them, you got to figure out how you're going to work this. Okay. Again, most simplistic thing that you can do is leave your business. Let's say you got five kids and two of them want to go into the business. Okay. So you got some options on those two kids. No, the simplest thing is to, again, testamentarily, when you die, You put it in your estate planning documents that when you die, your business is to be devised to those two kids. Okay? But so those kids would end up with your business when you're deceased, because plenty of people like control. They don't want to give it to them while they're alive. What's the problem with doing that? How do the other three kids feel? Dad or mom, you, or both, you gave this business to these two kids. What do I get? Okay? So you can make up for giving that business to those two kids depending on the other assets that you own. So if you have a good estate planning attorney, you and he or she will sit there and try to figure out if the business is worth $1 million and you give it to two of the kids, how do you make up for that $1 million by giving the other kids $500,000 of other assets off of the top of the estate so that everybody's equal? And that's something that you have to figure out. And sometimes you have to play with the numbers because the value of the business changes over time. So that's probably the most simplistic way of dealing with the business. If you have no kids that want to go into the business, then you got to figure out, you got to make sure that whoever your successor trustee is conversant enough with your business so that they can sell it and get some money from it to pay for your family if you pass away. If somebody's not conversant with your business and you die, it's very hard to sell the business because you're the person that makes it valuable. So you have to figure out who the trustee can be that can sell the business. And for example, if I have lots of clients that are dentists and doctors, if you're a dentist and you die, that business has to be sold right away, because as soon as the patients find out that you're deceased, they're already looking for another dentist. So it has to be sold very quickly or it loses its value right away. So those are some of the things that you have to take into account when you're doing business planning. If you have partners that are in your business, that's a whole different set of situation. That is a situation where you want to set up a contract, Elliot, with your partners that obligates them to buy you out when you're deceased. And many times what they will do is they'll do cross insurance policies on each other to provide the funds so that if one partner dies, the other two partners own life insurance on him or her, and they get proceeds from that life insurance, and then they can use the proceeds to buy out the rest of the family. So those are some of the things that you got to think about when you're transferring a business or you're thinking about transferring a business either upon your death or upon your retirement.
Well, you obviously know what you're talking about, and these are complicated subjects, Larry. What's the hottest thing in estate planning right now?
Okay, so Elliot, the hottest thing in estate planning right now is property taxes. When Prop 19 passed, parents could no longer give real estate to their kids without an immediate property tax reassessment when the kids got the property. You used to be able to give away $1 million worth of assessed value in real estate to your kids without a property tax reassessment. So under this current law, which by the way, was very disguised when it was presented to the voters, they made it, it was the tail wagging the dog. They made it sound like the important thing was people over 55 being able to transfer their property tax base in their houses. That was not the important thing. The important thing is that they took away this $1 million. So now what's going on is the kids may not be able to pay the increase in the property taxes when the parents die. And what happens is they're going to have to sell those properties. So the real estate agents, I hope none of them are listening right now, they are going to benefit hugely from this new law because they're going to end up selling properties. And really, the real estate lobbyists were the ones that were primarily behind the passage of this law. Now, there is still some things that can be done so that your property taxes don't go up when your kids receive your properties. It's complicated. It involves setting up LLCs and giving your kids interest in the LLCs, but it can be done. And that's the thing that's the hottest thing right now on my plate in the estate planning arena.
That's great. So, Larry, what's the best way for people to reach you?
Email or phones. I'm relatively old school. I certainly don't have any problem talking on the phone with my clients or my potentially new clients. As a matter of fact, I find that the phone call is much better. It gives me a personal tie to the clients. If I'm just doing email, there's no personal tie. And as you know, Elliot, people like working with people that they feel comfortable with on a personal level. So that being said, no problem if somebody emails me, they say, I'm interested in setting up a living trust. Let's have what I say is, okay, good. Let's have an initial complimentary introductory conversation so that you can hear me a little bit and I can hear you a little bit. And if they want to do a Zoom conference so that we can each make sure that we have two eyes and a nose, I'm not sure about anything else, we can do that to kick things off.
And then what's the best number to reach you at?
415-365-4001.
Great. All right. And if anybody needs his email address, just reach out to me and we'll get it over to you as well.
You can always look me up. I'm all over the place. Just look up Lawrence Beck Attorney and you can find all my information there. And I run the Trust and Estates Department at the law firm where I'm a partner. It's called Haas & Najarian. We're on Maiden Lane in San Francisco. So we're literally a boutique law firm on literally a boutique street.
Great. Well, Larry, it's been a great conversation. I want to thank you very, very much for being part of this today.
Thank you for inviting me to be part of this. And anytime you want to do something that is more complicated and so on and so forth, I'd be glad to talk about it, Elliot.
Great. Well, everybody, this has been another episode of Meet the Expert. Have a great day. We'll see you again real soon.